podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hi there, I'm Brian Abana, and you're listening to the Mall Over Podcast.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to this week's Mall Over Podcast, the only rugby podcast that gives you all the news, views, and opinion on the weekend's rugby action, all with a West Country accent. You can find us on Twitter. We are at Mall Over Podcast. We are Mall Over Rugby Podcast on Facebook. And you can find all of our podcasts on Anchor and Apple Pods and the Google Store and lots of other places. I've not tried Alexa yet. I'm not entirely sure whether she likes the Mall Over Podcast, but maybe give that a go and see what happens. I am joined this week by Ben Eustace, who is freshly jabbed. Is that probably the best thing for you to say?
Pfizered and up to the eyeballs, mate.
Absolutely Pfizered. Yeah. Another old man who has recently been injected, not with meat, is Doug.
Now then.
How are you?
Better than I was 24 hours after I was jabbed up.
Pfizer?
Pfizer? Oxford. Just waiting for the blood clot.
AstraZeneca.
Doug, is what you're saying that this podcast has got potential to go a little bit Dante's Fireplaces?
Yes. We start.
Oh, it's a good paper.
Oh wow! I mean, that's a reference that not many people will get, but I suppose our loyal listeners will. And obviously the two of us that are
keep saying Christ.
The two of us that are a bit further away from 40 than the other two is the housewife's favourite.
Looking from the waistline, eh, Russ?
From the waistline. looking resplendent in a very James Herriot style gilet. Phil Farmvet, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Yeah, I'm rocking the Farmvet look with a muddy brown coloured gilet that's nicely padded for this cool evening.
I really want you to be wearing some faded red corduroys.
Yeah. And Chelsea boots.
Yeah, I got one of the two of them on.
Definitely got Chelsea boots on. Phil's never out of those Chelsea boots.
In the boots.
Right, let's move on into some rugby. Last week saw Warren Gatland pick his Lions squad. Interestingly enough, there were a few shocks, there were a few omissions. Ben, let's start with you. What's your biggest sort of takeaway from that Lions squad announcement last week, other than a thoroughly wooden performance from Jason Leddon?
You can't pick a bad Lions squad, really, can you? I mean, it'd be very difficult to do. So it's
Eddie Jones would have a go.
He would, yeah. But you know, there were some people flipping tables on social media, and I don't think that's the right approach to take. There's some I agreed with, some that I thought were actually good moves, and there's a few that I don't agree with. I'm a little bit disappointed there's no Underhill in there. I think he'd be perfect for South Africa. Rumour has it he's kind of top of the replacements chart, so he's probably likely to get out there. But I just think if you've got big men running down the sort of 9-10 channel, then Underhill's perfect to put a brick wall in the way. I think he's kind of picked players to play the same way. I don't think there's a huge amount of mix and match in there, you know, sort of similar style players to replace similar style players. I like the Conan pick. I think that is a good pick. So he's impressed me whenever I've seen him, and I hadn't really considered him because he'd not been starting for Ireland.
I mean, I'd like to have seen him in black and white, because then he would have been Conan the Barbarian.
But
good one.
Was it that bad? I quite enjoyed that.
You're the
anyway,
only one.
Sorry.
Yeah, should we just stop the podcast?
Sincere apologies, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Have we literally hit rock bottom?
But yeah, I think really he's not. He's picked a side that isn't going to get bullied by South Africa, but he's also not going to attack them head on. I think it's designed to move them around the pitch. There's a few players in there that have got in there on utility. You know, they can play a couple of positions. I'm looking at Elliot Daly here. I think he's a little lucky to tour, but
altitude and a long boot may have helped him.
Yeah, I think that's probably it. I'm no more and no less confident than I was. I just think it's a decent squad. And I think he's picked it to play a certain way. He's got the option of a heavyweight six by picking all those second rows that can play there. He's got that's a quick back row. It's a very mobile back row that he's picked. And I think they're going to almost take a slight leaf out of the 97 Lions book.
Kind of depends where he sees Tadhg Burton. Although officially he's down as the second row, and I would agree with that as the second row. But there's been plenty of people calling for him as a six, which obviously alters that balance a bit.
Well, it's the same as picking a Toji as six, isn't it? Like, there's no difference in that.
Yeah, no. And I wouldn't pick either of them at six.
Except you could probably argue that Burn is a better six than the Toji is, just about. But he's still a lock. And why bother having specialist back row sixes on the bench or not even on the tour when you're going to pick several sort of hybrid second row back row players? I find it a little bit strange. I mean, like Courtney Laws, for instance.
He's a second row.
There isn't a specialist six. You've got three number eights. You've got Curry, Tipperich and Watson. So they're all sevens, really, aren't they? They could all do a job at six, but they're all really sevens. And then you've got, if you decide that you do want to front up a little bit more, you could put a Toje, Burn, Laws, or even Henderson at six if you got desperate.
But I suppose is it a bench thing as well?
Yeah, of course it is, because you can burn on the bench. Gives you so, extra options, doesn't it? They could go 6-2 on the bench with Burn.
Well, they could.
I think they will.
I was thinking that they might go 6-2, but on reflection, would they need, if they have someone like Burn on the bench, right, do they need to go 6-2? Because they could make a conscious decision then to see at what area he could have the biggest impact, whether that would be coming in at lock for and then you think, if Maro Itoje is giving away a lot of penalties, being targeted by referees, and we don't know who the referees are yet, but likelihood is they're going to be Angus Gardner. I would imagine he'll be there somewhere or somewhere abouts. A couple of the French guys.
I think we need to remember we're playing South Africa in South Africa. So, and potentially at altitude for at least part of the game. So I think he goes full front row replacement, he goes a designated second row replacement, a second row stroke six replacement, and another back row player, because the amount of work these guys are going to get through is just going to be phenomenal. And they don't really have the time to acclimatise to those kind of conditions. And I think the backs, and not meaning to be disrespectful to the backs, but I think they can probably get away with a bit more with only two covering. That's my gut feel.
Well, he's going to play, you could look at that back three and think you could have three international class fullbacks in that back three,
which I think is what it'll do, by the way.
Yeah. And if he, because you're at altitude in South Africa.
Hog Watson Williams.
Yeah. But even if you don't, you're going to have two of those in there, I would have thought, injuries permitting. So you've got some flexibility there. If you've got Farrell either in the team or on the bench, again you've got some flexibility there, so you could potentially, if you had that back three, you could go with Farrell and a scrum half on the bench, and then you've covered the backs.
Yeah.
I mean, it could go, I mean, it could go like 2009 and you need like 19 substitutes, but.
Yeah. Or, and I don't think he would say he plays bigger Farrell, plays Farrell as a 12.
I think that's exactly what he'll do.
I don't know. We'll see. You then just have a centre on the bench because you've got two tens there anyway.
Yeah.
But I mean, in terms of the squad, coming back to the initial point, Ben's right. Like, there's probably the 23 that are likely to start a test. Most people are going to pick 20 out of those 23. And all of them are in that squad. You could pick a handful of players who are unlucky not to be in that squad. So I think Ringrose is unlucky. I think Josh Adams is unlucky when Van der Merwe's in there.
Josh Adams is in there, mate.
Yeah. Oh, is he? Oh, yeah. Sorry. Well, balls that out, didn't I? I think Sinclair's unlucky. I think Johnny May's unlucky. I think Navidi's maybe unlucky. I think Underhill's unlucky. So you can pick a handful of people who are probably unlucky, but they're not shoo-ins, and they're probably not in many people's starting 15. Equally, you could pick a handful of people there who you could say are probably quite lucky to have made it. I think Bundiaki's bloody lucky to have made it. I don't think he would be in my squad. I think Daly's lucky to have made it.
I think as soon as Tuilagi, they ruled Tuilagi out, they kind of brought Aki in because he's
big.
Similar style, isn't he? Just a big lump to run up the middle. I think
Johnny Hill's bloody lucky to make it.
I think he is. Yeah, that's the one that surprised me the most. I don't think it would do the squad any harm to get drop Hill and bring Underhill in.
Doug, you've been very passive so far. If you want, what are your thoughts on the squad?
I think one of the things that people have missed is that this is the most sort of balanced nationwide squads in memory, really. And I think a lot of that is to do with, I think there maybe have been some political pressure from the unions, given what's happened in the last year or so, to give a fair representation from each nation, to give each nation a little bit of something to cheer during this tour. With that in mind, I think there are some players probably that are on tour that maybe shouldn't be. I think potentially, like we've said, Bundiaki is one, potentially Xander Fagerson or
Chris Harris.
Yeah, Chris Harris has shown that he's got a game that will work in South Africa.
I think I'd have picked Harris, whatever.
But I do think if you look at the squads, there's 8 from Scotland, 8 from Ireland, and then 10 each from England and Wales. I think Ken Owens is pretty lucky to go. I'm not sure. I think that's a sentimental pick. Same with Alan Wynne. I don't think Alan Wynne is. I think you could point at him and say that there are at least 5 or 6 locks better than him.
Well, and that's what the South African press have come out and said as well. They've said you've picked somebody as your captain who wouldn't be in your first 15 and wouldn't be in the top handful of second rows in the Northern Hemisphere. You picked a lazy plodder, I think they termed him.
Well, I mean, that's something you put on the changing room wall, isn't it?
I do
think there are some people that are unlucky to have missed out. I think should any of the fly halves go down, it would be interesting to see if they bring up Ford or Sexton. And if Ford misses out, then that's obviously a Gatlin not rating Ford. You could argue that Ford's probably more unlucky to miss out than many of the sort of, you know, Carl Sinclairs or anyone like that. But I think it's fairly. I think South Africa have, let's not forget, sort of before the World Cup, South Africa were a bit of a laughing stock. They were getting pumped every time they played, and they turned it on for 3 or 4 games, and all of a sudden they think that they're going to just walk over this Lions side. If you'd have asked any of us before the World Cup, going into this Lions tour where we thought a Lions team would stand against South Africa, we'd have all said, oh, we'll win 3-0 comfortably, probably 30-point drubbings. South Africa have beaten England in a World Cup final, and all of a sudden they're the All Blacks.
Be interesting to see, won't it? There's definite, you know, they've got a definite style, the Lions, yeah. South Africa. And Warren Gatland.
I'm a bit tired of the size narrative. I mean, England's pack was heavier than South Africa's in the World Cup. Their backs, man for man, were bigger.
It's not necessarily numerical size. I know that's a really retarded thing to say, but in terms of,
I just think it's a very lazy narrative to sort of push that.
It's the style of play that they bring as much as anything. It's forward, direct, confrontational. It's more about trying to dominate the contact than it is necessarily about those skillful elements.
I mean, you say that, Phil, but look at the tries they scored against England in the World Cup final. They weren't. They were, a lot of the tries were spun out wide. And you've got two flying wingers. You've got Faf de Klerk. Yeah. You've got Andre Pollard who can spray the ball around. I mean, it's only really, they've got a traditional sort of crash ball 12 in Diallende, but you know, they've got some big lumps in the second row. But every team's got big lumps in the second row.
It's that classic old school coaching game style of your forwards smash it up and then your backs take advantage of it.
But they're not a 12 man
rugby, definitely not. But they hit sort
of flogged, and we're sort of believing it ourselves now. I think we need to understand that we've got really good players as well.
You can pick a South African forward out of a lineup, couldn't you? They have a sort of look and body type. They're sort of very tall and
6 years bold. Of anabolic steroids by the age of 18.
That's
the South African body type.
Wrestling wildebeest and. Yeah, you know, they perhaps don't carry quite as much weight as a European forward. It's more like sort of, you know, it's all muscle, isn't it? There's not so much excess weight banging around on a South African forward, so maybe they don't weigh quite as much. There's probably a farming analogy in there somewhere, but let's not go there.
Doug made the point about
Mako Vinopola would not look like a South African forwards if you put a South African head on him.
No, we took.
That's,
we
that's
took,
the point.
We talked
but
about this a few
but that's
weeks
not true.
Ago.
Look at Kitchoff. He's fat. You wouldn't say Stephen Kitchoff is a
fat ginger
genetically
bastard.
Modified rugby soldier, would you? He's just a big ginger blob.
I'm thinking of the sort of
Big Ginger Blob is the title of this week's podcast, by the way. And everyone's going to think you're talking about me.
Yeah, they are. I'm thinking of kind of Etzebeth and Vermeulen and players like that. But
but you could say the same about Maro Itoje.
Yeah, you could. And that's just the point you're making is whilst there's a perception that they. And as a nation, as a team, are physical and big and strong. I mean, like, it's all relative, isn't it? Because you look at Tom Curry, Doug, you made the point weeks and weeks ago about Billy Vinopola carrying into contact. And you just got to watch the speed versus whatever it is, the equation for force or whatever. What were you saying about the
momentum?
Mass times momentum. Yeah. Like, you can have somebody running not as fast, but bigger. To cause a big collision, or you could have somebody that's slightly smaller running a lot faster. And watching Tom Curry go into contact now, and people like Underhill, people like Hamish Watson, who, by the way, Sam Simmons has the most. Hamish Watson has got one of the most incredible salads for a Barnet I think I've ever seen at the moment. It's pure excellent.
He's also the most English man ever.
Yeah, that's
true. I want someone to do is dub the Hamish Watson. Interview where he's talking about being selected as a Lion, but with a drunk Glaswegian accent over the top of
brilliant. And you mentioned Sam Simmons.
Sorry,
there.
Actually seems Scottish.
Yeah, you mentioned Sam Simmons there. That's obviously unbelievable. Warren Gatland sees something in him and the way he operates to pick him over the likes of, you know, you think about Ben Earl, who Eddie seems to favour in the England team, you know, does it point to a way that he's going to look to play? Does it look to point to, say, Sam Simmons could actually be that sixth forward on the bench in the Test side that says actually you could play across the back row and you can offer something completely different? You know, he's basically said, I you know, this has probably been said and we have said it many times, I'd love to see Sam Simmons against South Africa in the centre. Not that it'll ever happen, but imagine that, Dielende and Simmons.
I'd just like to see Sam Simmons picked for England by a coach who
isn't a massive cunt.
So arrogant he can't be the person that decides that he's good enough.
Yeah, I mean,
I think it also shows the Lions aren't going to play like England, which is a good thing after this Six Nations. But, you know, even England's plan A, when it works, the Lions aren't going to play quite like that. They're going to be attacking wider channels rather than...
They don't play like the Crusaders, eh? Whoever the team is that Gatlin coaches down there.
Was it the Chiefs? They got pumped.
Chiefs, that's it.
No, I think it's more of a case of the Lions are going to play with the ball. They aren't going to go down the Eddie Jones route of, well, we'll give you the ball and then we'll just make loads of tackles and make you make mistakes. I think Gatlin wants to play with the ball more, which, you know, in rugby terms has got to be good for everyone. And
I think all I was going to say is I'm a bit, I don't know, I think Slade's been okay for England, but there was just something in sort of a gut feeling I had that he was good, that the Lions shirt would be the making of him.
Yeah, and I agree.
I thought maybe it would have been, you know, it just would have fitted him, and it's a shame he's not going. But
you know the impact. You know when Jonathan Davis first came outside Jamie Roberts, was it the Australia tour two tours ago? And he kind of said burst onto the scene, but he'd been playing well for Wales, and then he turned up in that Australia tour, and he was phenomenal. And that sort of the way that Gatlin plays, I thought could have really suited Henry Slade.
Yeah, I think so.
As opposed to just kicking the ball away and not allowing him to do what he does.
I think some players just grow into the jersey, don't they? Like I'm thinking about like Rob Carney and 4 years before that. You know, and it was a little, that was not a disappointment, because I think, you know, there's good arguments to have other players in the squad, but I just did think that might have been like a good flyer to take. But 4 years time, Redpath and Slade might be a good bet.
I'm not having Redpath, mate. Sorry.
Dead to you, is he?
Well, no, he'd be dead to a South African when they pick him up and snap him in half and use it and pick the clingers out of their arseholes.
Yeah, I mean,
playing Australia in 4 years' time, though.
God knows what Australia will be like in 4 years' time. But, you know, that's if we're ever allowed, you know, as a back in there ever as a nation, if they ever let visitors back there ever again. I've completely lost my train of thought. A couple of shock selections. Obviously, you mentioned Johnny Hill. One person that's not really been mentioned so far is Van der Merwe.
I had him in my starting team when we floated it out while we were thinking of other things to do on the podcast a couple of weeks ago.
Are you and Gats good mates? It's an odd one.
No, I'm just a rugby savant, mate. I know what I'm talking about. I'm like
a rugby savant. I've got to be honest. I'm surprised that he's been picked. But when you look at the other wingers, it kind of makes sense.
Is he not just making up the numbers of the Scottish contingent? He ain't getting anywhere near that Test side.
No, I've got reservations about his defence. But he must know all the good bars, though.
Yeah, I think it's just a geography thing. I think he was going there to see his family and they thought, well, we'll save on the plane ticket.
It is a sort of, you know, we grow up as British people who like rugby, wanting to play for the Lions and it being like the pinnacle of our rugby playing, you know, environment. And then you get
Bundyaki and Van der Merwe.
Duane Van der Merwe. And, you know, it's like, I mean, I think that there should almost be like an obligation to change their name. So it should become like, I don't know,
Duane McDonald.
David McMurva or something like that.
O-Murva.
The thing is, the Lions can set their own
Bundy Oaki.
Their own residential requirements as they see fit. They've just chosen to go with the ones that everybody else goes with so that they can perceive that they're picking the best team. I mean, let's be honest, Taulupe Faletau doesn't sound overly Welsh, but he's as Welsh as they come.
At least you can make that sound Welsh.
Go on then.
You'd like that, wouldn't you?
I really would. You know, I'd like even more if Ben did it.
I'm not getting into that.
A couple of people. James Ryan was another one that missed out.
So Faletau was 7 when he moved to Wales, 6 or 7. So you think fair enough. James Ryan, I'm not that fussed about James Ryan, to be honest. We've got such a... Yeah, he probably fits in that handful that are above Wyn Jones, but we've got so many second rows coming out of our ears that are pretty similar. I don't know. Again, I think we can argue the toss about ultimately people who are squad players and are there for the midweek games. I'm not really that fussed about that. I worry more about who's going to be in that 23 at the weekends.
I'm not so with you guys on the Alan Wyn Jones isn't that great argument either. I do think he's better than we're giving him credit for.
Well, he's an international lock, but yeah, you know, I'm not wearing him other than his apparent leadership qualities. I'm not having him as an effective second row.
Give me a Premiership team he gets into, Ben.
Bath.
He'd walk into Bath team, yeah. I don't know. Give me one he wouldn't get in.
He wouldn't get in at Saints.
Wouldn't get in at Exeter.
He would get in at Exeter.
No, he wouldn't.
I'd have Adam Wyn Jones over.
Absolutely not a prayer he'd get in at Exeter.
I'd have him over both of those.
No,
you're wrong.
Have him over Johnny Hill and any one of the South Africans.
Or Johnny Gray.
Johnny Gray.
I do think he's better than Johnny Gray, for sure.
You're wrong.
Without any basis or fact, you're wrong. Yeah. We've talked with Alan Wyn Jones to death, haven't we?
You know you're wrong. I'm just looking at the squad pictures on the official Lions website. And
none of them look happy, do they?
Well,
Faletau does.
They look like they've been made to pay out of their own pockets for those horrible shirts.
Cowan Dickey looks like he knows your deepest secrets.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Andrew Porter served me a coffee out of the back of a horse box the other day.
Do you think they're all told to, like, you know, look moderately mean? I mean, Ty Byrne and Bundy Aki both smiling. Dan Bigger.
Bundy Aki's smiling. He didn't play for Ireland in the summer.
Conor Murray looks like he's just come out of a six-week stay in a hospital somewhere.
He's another one that's a fucking miracle he's made it, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Is Thomas Williams injured at the moment?
Pass. But there are still plenty of other nines. I mean, bloody Gibson Park played most of the Six Nations for Ireland, didn't he?
He's shit, though,
Bet. He is shit. But was Conor Murray there for experience? Bit of midweek experience? And you've also got to ask yourself, like, what kind of tour is this going to be? Without, there's going to be no fans, there's going to be no...
That's one thing I wanted to say, actually. Like, I want the Lions midweek games to be against, like, Transvaal and...
Yeah,
West Greco. I don't want to be against the Stormers and like Super Rugby teams that no one gives a shit about. I want to see proper South African farmers beating the shit out of people. You know, not second rate, you know, international players. I want proper gnarly shit, filling people in off the ball. with really nice kits.
Like 97. That's basically what happened in 97.
Yeah, I want that. Things were better when I was younger.
Sounds like a new regular feature. Things that were better when Doug was younger. Everything.
Everything.
But yeah, no, I just mean like from a touring point of view, like the Lions tours have always been about sort of inclusivity and meeting people and going to different areas and to like a real, say, PR thing. But it is like a lot of public relations, isn't it? It usually brings a lot of money to countries. It gets people involved. It captures the spirit. And not being able to do any of that, you know, how much do you think it's going to feel like a Lions tour, other than having some midweek rugby? And, you know, the best thing about the Lions tours usually is when they're in South Africa, when they're in Australia and New Zealand, and the midweek matches are at 9 o'clock in the morning. Start drinking early.
So definitely, I think out there isn't going to feel like a Lions tour. Things are still going to be relatively different in South Africa, to the point where, yeah, you're not going to get that kind of cultural angle that you usually get in a Lions tour. Having said that, we're not going to be out there anyway, so that's largely irrelevant. For us, it's just going to be some rugby matches.
Yeah, and talking of rugby matches, let's move on slightly from the Lions. England have got a couple of tests in the summer, playing USA and Canada at Twickenham. And there's also going to be an England A fixture in a year that also has a Lions tour, which seems a really, really odd thing to do. So with these main guys not involved this summer, who do we think's going to push for Eddie Jones's selection in the summer for these two internationals? Do you think we're going to see a really, really experimental squad, or are we going to see some sort of basic fundamentals with a few others sprinkled in?
Well, it's Eddie Jones, so he'll probably pick exactly the same squad with some absolute curveballs thrown in. I mean, you might get to see someone like who hasn't been spoken about ever.
Umanga will start. Marcus Smith will do nothing all summer. Umanga will start for the England team, and then George Ford will start for the A team, just to confuse things. And Joe Simmons and Marcus Smith will just have the summer off. You'll probably get
Jamal Ford Robinson starting for the England.
Will Chudley.
Yeah.
Henry Thomas will come back in.
What any podcast who's worth their salt would do is go through and look at all the apprentice players that he's called up, put them in a pot and pick a team from those. But none of those will get a look in because Eddie's forgotten he picked them.
Or he's only picked them to stop some other country picking them.
Yeah.
They've done their job.
People like Tommy Raffel.
Tommy Ruffle.
Dave Ruffle. Ribbons.
George Martin, he'll be in.
Jorge Martin. Jorge Martin.
They're going to... You'd imagine that the A fixture is just another fixture, really, because it's an A team anyway, isn't it? The Lions aren't there.
It popped into my head as we first started discussing this that usually every year they have some sort of Quilter Cup bullshit non-cap international against the Barbarians, don't they? And
Josh Brunelli doesn't think he's bullshit, mate.
No, but he didn't play, did he? You know, in fairness to Josh. I mean, I'd love to see him get some sort of representation, because we'll talk about Josh in a minute. But Dom Brandt played a couple of years ago, didn't he? And Doug's mate Josh Bassett and loads of random players playing that non-cap international. And it just makes you think that, you know, if that's what they're going to do, they're going to play. They play in
Scotland Day,
in Welford Road. Like, I mean, I can't imagine Scotland Day are going to be tremendous. But it does give an opportunity to those people. Will it not be the same for
Scotland though? That it will just be their first team. It's just a non-cap England Scotland.
I mean, is
riding on it
because we're playing USA and Canada, aren't we? That's the actual England fixtures. Now, does this suggest that maybe he's going to pick the bones of, you know, the team, his normal team, and he's using this A fixture as a sort of dress rehearsal to see who he wants? Or does that make too much sense?
I mean, it probably makes too much sense, Ben. But, you know, you think this summer, the USA and Canada, no matter who we pick from a premiership, like from an England available premiership that aren't on the Lions, we should beat them. We should beat all three of those.
Those were the Saxons fixtures at one stage, weren't they?
Well, absolutely.
USA and Canada.
So, like, you would hope that the likes of Marcus Smith, Alex Dombrandt, my mind has stuck it, Harlequins, like Tom O'Flaherty.
Like, yeah,
how could he be?
Well, I'm thinking Stewart and De Glanville are top of my list.
Ollie Hustle Collins.
Yeah,
there's a whole raft of people who almost deserve an opportunity to see how they cope with a bit of added pressure and get exposure to that under a bit less issues than bringing them in a high pressure game.
Have not mentioned Joe Simmons once?
I've said him twice.
Well, I wasn't listening. So.
No, Joe Simmons. Simmons is in direct competition now with Ford and Smith, isn't he? But I, you know my feelings on Joe Simmons.
You think it was a good opportunity to give Ford,
Slade,
Noel, players like that that have got 30, 40 caps. Just give them the summer off. Yeah, if they go with the Lions, so much the better. But
you've got to remember these guys had a
delayed summer off with 25 grand on the line per game.
No, then maybe that's the whole point of the 18 fixtures. You don't have to pay them full fees. Maybe it's a cost saving exercise. But they've had
how long until Six Nations fixtures are 18 games?
Exactly. They've had a prolonged season, because the end of last season ran straight into the start of this. There's a few players who probably wouldn't say no to a rest. But
there'll be lots that say no to 25, that wouldn't say no to 25 grand, more to Doug's point. But I'll tell you who, like the likelihood of that won't get picked. So the likes of Ollie Lawrence and Paolo Adogwu probably won't be anywhere to be seen this summer.
Tell up.
You spent the Six Nations in the squad. It was a shit show. That was not one iota your fault, because you spent about a combined 7 minutes on the pitch. But you're not getting picked.
If Joe Simmons doesn't get a mention in any of these squads and Jacob Umanger plays, I'm going to start flipping tables.
Hey, look, the last, I don't know, 3 weeks or so have shown where the hierarchy sits in young English fly halves for me. You've got Joe Simmons, who plays that controlling role at 10, maybe not as expansive and not as much magic, but does a great job of controlling the team, sits top of the pile on that lot. You've got Marcus Smith, if you want somebody who's expansive, who can turn a game and read things and is just a magician, top of the pile of that. And Umanga is very much Marcus Smith's understudy in that role. And it's been obvious from the recent games. I mean, Marcus Smith I think he was almost trolling Umanga a little bit when Quinns played Wasps, and he got the ball and just ghosted around the outside of him. And it wasn't even that Umanga made a poor attempt to tackle him. He didn't even get a finger on him.
The problem they've all got, Simmons, Umanga and Smith, is it George Ford's 27?
Yep.
29, isn't
he? Either way, he's got years ahead.
Still not old. That's fair.
Well, he's got another World Cup cycle in him, at least.
Yeah, for sure. What about this?
He's 28. There you go.
Robson, Smith, Thorley, Devoto, Marchant, Bassett and Stewart. How does that sound?
It sounds great, but if you take that, if that's your World Cup side, you're getting pumped.
Yeah.
What about if that's your World Cup side in 2027?
You're getting pumped.
This is your chance, Doug. This is your chance. This is the chance that you've been talking about for years of getting different players in.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm not disputing that. What I'm saying is that I don't think that balance is right.
No, but you could get, say, you got three of them in your next World Cup squad. It'd be worth it, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, I'd immediately take Smith. I'm not sure Marchant's ever going to cut it at international level. Thorley seems to have lost a bit of the magic. I don't know if he's been worked out slightly. Robson, yeah, probably. But I think Spencer's better. And I think Alex Mitchell will be better.
Yeah, I think Spencer's better as well. I think Spencer might have been a good shout for the Lions squad, to be quite honest. But
What the bloody, you know, what's happened to McConaughey? Is he just perennially injured now? Is he just injured all the time?
It's like, a mystery, isn't it? It really is a mystery. Like,
he's gone off the boil. That Muir's a good player.
Not getting in Bath's team.
Yeah.
Less than a year.
They seem to really like that Will Muir, don't they, at Bath? The X7s lad and Alex Gray getting a lot. I mean, we'll come on to again.
Yeah, you know, your name we haven't mentioned in any of these sort of discussions is Max Malins.
Yeah.
Who apparently can play anywhere.
I mean, he played he is an exceptional rugby player.
Yeah.
We did one of those video podcasts a few years ago. And I said that we all picked a young player that we'd like our team to sign. And I said that I wanted Saints to sign Max Malins. It's on YouTube. It's on their Facebook. If you go to our Facebook page, that video is still there. But
I don't really buy the whole Max Malins thing yet.
Really?
Yeah. I don't get.
He's,
I think,
an absolute,
he's all right.
Rolls Royce. I'm telling you, he's brilliant. Yeah.
He scores
amazing tries. He scores champagne tries. I don't see him as an all-round rugby player yet. It's a really hard thing for me to explain why. I watch him and I go, yeah, you're okay, but I don't buy into the hype that you're the best thing since sliced bread.
He could be, in my opinion, he could be our version of Bowden Barrett.
But at what position, Doug?
Well, exactly. Barrett can play any position for the All Blacks. I think Malins could play 10, 15, 11, 13 for England comfortably.
Yeah, but Bowden Barrett is New Zealand's best 10 and in the top two 15s. I don't see Max Malins as our best 10 or our best 15.
But I think wherever he's gone, and he's played for Saracens, and Saracens aren't going to... Saracens can't drop Owen Farrell. They could potentially play him at 12 to accommodate Malins at 10, but Malins is equally good at 15, to play him at 15. And
But they were playing Goud at 10 when Farrell wasn't there.
I'm not sure. Yeah, but Malins was injured a lot of the year they went down.
Yeah. I don't know.
I feel about Saracens. I genuinely believe that Max Malins.
Yeah, the fact that you're saying something positive about a Saracens player means that he must be. You must think he's absolutely amazing. But I don't think there's a single person in the world who likes rugby who doesn't look at Bowden Barrett at 10 and go, "Holy fuck, you're playing a different game to everybody else." Yeah. And I just don't see that with Malins.
I don't think we've seen him enough
at the highest level. When he played there for the England under-20s in that tournament when I think it was over here where we won it and Harry Mallinder was playing as well. Was it that? Maybe it wasn't that tournament. But anyway, when I saw him playing at 10 for England under-20s and he was picking the ball at first receiver, just gliding through, you know, he's a different class of player, honestly.
when I've seen him play 10 for Bristol, he's looked like that. They played Wasps earlier this season or back
in. He's got levels, man. Like he can just turn on the gas and just disappear. And he's one of those players that doesn't look like he's fast, but he's obviously is. And that's very much like Beauden Barrett.
I think, that is Beauden Barrett. I've been more impressed with him at 10 than at 15. I did think he did pretty well for England in that one game he played, and then he was unfortunate to get injured. But I am completely on the Steward hype train.
I just think
he's just a classic fullback, and I've been really impressed with Tom de Glanville as well. I think he's really good as a fullback.
You can't just keep saying Bath players.
He can and he will. So coming back to the Malins thing at 10, I think what it is I think he almost tries his decision making. I think sometimes he tries to do those things too often. In the way I read it, and I'm stumbling over my words because I'm finding it really hard to articulate it for something that it's just a feeling. It's something in my head that I'm not 100% sure of. Marcus Smith, when he first came onto the scene 2 years ago as an 18-year-old, he would try things when it wasn't on, and him now is a much more rounded player. He understands senior rugby a lot better, and there is a big difference between under-20s and senior rugby. Purely
very much echoes of when Cristiano Ronaldo first started playing for Man United.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Doing the stepovers when you didn't need to do them.
Yeah, exactly. And
he works it out and he's unstoppable.
And 12 months ago, you were raving about Marcus Smith, Doug, and saying how amazing he was. And I was a bit like, nah. And I buy it now. I totally buy Marcus Smith. If you want to play that kind of rugby, if you want to play a more controlling game of rugby, you go with the Joe Simmons. But if you want to play that type of rugby and you've got the players to take advantage of it, 100% go with Marcus Smith. Max Malins, he just looks like I think he's too old to be trying too hard, if that makes sense. And in that regard, I just don't see him being as good as the hype. I'm not saying he's a bad player. I'm not saying he's not England material. Just some people spend their entire life trying to masturbate all over him. And I don't get it.
But that's classic of any England player that's not in the starting 15. Like, you know, if you listen to Twitter, Sam Simmons is the best forward in the world. Which he isn't. He's a great player, but he's not. He's, you know, there's
fundamental flaws.
He's not the best number eight in the Lions squad. Fact.
Who is, you know, I'm just having this.
Falatau.
Oh, yeah, because he plays for Bath. Okay. Yeah, but yeah, you're right.
Full disclosure, Ben's literally wearing a Bath shirt.
and like, now Marcus Smith is the best fly half in the world, you know, and he single-handedly transformed that England team. And that's not true. He's a really good young fly half, and he's playing out of his skin, and he should be in the squad, but you know, all of England's problems aren't going to be solved by Marcus Smith coming into the team. And, you know, there was a corner of rugby Twitter that wanted him bust into the Lions squad.
Yeah.
And I suppose all we're saying is that Marcus Smith has the potential to have a strong future as England 10.
Yeah.
Like, but I mean, I know listeners of this podcast who think it's an absolute travesty that Malins didn't start all of the games in the Six Nations. And I'm just a bit more chill on him.
I think these players' next 10 years will be decided at the whim of who the next England coach is. If we get Pat Lam in, Marcus Smith is going to win 150 caps.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. And Max Malins will win 100 caps as well because he'll be playing fullback. If we get Warren Gatland in, then we're going to see Ford and Farrell for the next 20 years because I think they'll be wheeled out on Zimmer frames.
So to put it into context, Max Malins made his debut for Saracens at the same age as Marcus Smith is now. And that, I think, says something.
Yeah, but Saracens. Max, yeah, but Saracens Smith were fun.
Have, I guess Marcus Smith ended Nick Evans' career, right?
I don't know. Nick Evans must be 68 now.
Yeah. but your point that Max Malin's made his debut for Saracens when the age of Marcus Smith is now. Saracens dominated English and European rugby for the last 7 years through systematic financial doping and Owen Farrell.
Yeah.
And for a third of the season, they were without Owen Farrell and loads of other players who were off playing for England. And Malin still couldn't get a game.
I don't think it's a fact that he couldn't get a game. I think that's wrong.
I think the Harlequins and Saracen situations aren't even remotely similar.
No, I know, but...
But you're comparing them, Phil, directly.
What I'm saying is Marcus Smith has... If you compare Marcus Smith now as a 20-year-old with Max Malins as a 24-year-old, Marcus Smith has got so many of the errors out of his game. And Max Malins hadn't even played a single game of Premiership rugby.
But I think that, again, that's because Marcus Smith was thrust in at the deep end when Nick Evans had finished. And that, you know, that's the way that the Quins have done it. Saracens are slightly more risk averse. Could afford to ease him in. Slightly more risk averse when it comes to not financial doping. And.
But they throw Ben Earlin as an 18-year-old.
Horses for courses, isn't it? It's easier to throw in an 18-year-old back row player than it is to put in an 18, 19-year-old.
They eased even Atoje and Farrell in, you know, back in the day. They didn't throw them straight in.
Why would you throw Max Malins in at the expense of Farrell or
it's not.
Well, they
Having someone sat on the bench and exposing them to Premiership rugby is not throwing them in. Not when actually you know full well you're going to go out and play some games and stick 50, 60 points on teams. So
didn't he have an injury as well?
10 minutes of rugby. Yeah,
look, I agree with what you're saying to an extent, but I just think he's a victim of the club he was at because there is a very clear direction from Saracens that they sort of bleed players in gradually. There's no, you know, we're Saracens. We've got all these players. We don't need to. I'm sure if Marcus Smith would have been at Saracens, it would have been the same story.
Yeah, 100%. And I think next season when Max Malins goes back to Saracens, he will be number one in whatever position they choose to play in, which will probably be fullback.
Yeah. Do you know who was good? Jeremy Guscott.
Brilliant.
You know it's over for Ben from an analysis point of view when he starts praising Stuart Barnes.
We did have some questions in earlier. We already saw Simon Dixon. We've already started talking about the England stuff for this summer, the potential ins and outs. Another question from the Cornish incomer, which is something I wanted to get onto about the whole Kyle Sinclair thing, going back towards the Lions, but specifically the media in general, is what are your thoughts on the rugby press collectively pulling themselves around the room by their mickeys over Sinclair getting a bit upset?
As good a time as any for me to make my escape to the toilet rather than slag off the people I work with.
There's been a lot of media coverage of that Kyle Sinclair interview. There was a thing in the rugby paper about Kyle Sinclair angry. It was just a headline, which he is angry and he's upset about not being picked for the Lions. But this whole thing about him getting upset in an interview after just coming off the pitch, after playing 80 minutes of rugby, to be forced upon difficult questions about the Lions. It all seems a bit circle wanky to me. I don't know what you guys think about it. And then Hugo Monya started to cry in an interview with Pat Lamb because Kyle Sinclair hasn't been picked for the Lions. I just find it a bit odd.
So I watched the interview and actually I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was great to see a sports person showing genuine emotion and trying to express themselves and it made me vaguely more excited about the Lions, the fact that that's how rugby players feel about it. Whatever dickwads want to write in the papers, it's up to them. But I think it's fairly clear to say that rugby media is made up of a load of dinosaurs, supplemented by ex-players who love to spout utter bollocks and actually add zero insight to the enjoyment of the general rugby viewer. The exception to that, I would say, is David Flatman, who I find to be quite humorous and actually explain some stuff rather than just repeating what the other commentators have said in a slightly different way.
Ben?
I thought, fair play to Sinclair. He said what he thought, and you know, he must be feeling down about not being in the squad. I think most people would. You know, it's not earth-shattering news, is it? Player disappointed not to be picked. I just think
that is the key, right? I've got nothing against, like, literally, it was great to see an honest interview. I'm all for an honest interview. Like, in fact, he was getting a bit upset. Great. Like, he was honest. He was emotional. It's fine. But the whole media circus, like, wanking on about it because, it's such a great thing that he's showing such emotion. It's so good that he's doing this. It's so good that he's doing that. It's just normal. It's just a normal bloke talking about not being selected for something that he really wanted to be selected for.
But the problem is...
What do people expect?
But the problem is most sports stars have that kind of normality in press interviews coached out of them.
You have I don't think they do.
Or like, for whatever reason, it doesn't... There's so many interviews where people just pay platitudes to things. And Ellis Genge gets ripped to shreds whenever he comes out and says anything honest. Now, he speaks like somebody who's brought up in Bristol, because he was, and he doesn't always come across as being the most eloquent. But actually, we're in a situation now where having a personality and expressing yourself makes you stand out. You don't hear anything that there would be. I don't know. I would guess there's 30 or 40 people who are disappointed they didn't get selected, either didn't get selected or didn't get a phone call or a letter from Gatland about the Lions. The problem is there's only one of them who's ended up being interviewed.
Yeah, the only one that got man of the match. Nobody spoke to Johnny May after the game. Nobody spoke to Henry Slade after the game. You know, it was an interview. It was an honest reaction. He should be applauded. He should be applauded for giving an honest reaction, and then we should all just move on. I don't see why such a big thing's been made of it. And as I say, then Ugamonya carrying on, like, I'm not entirely sure what to think about that.
I'm done with Ugamonya at the moment.
Yeah. Well, let's not go into that, because you know, I draw the line and be kind, eh? Right, next. Some random noises. Right, Bristol. Let's talk about Bristol versus Bath, Ben, for a bit. Bath started well. Simon Dixon wants to know, do Bristol need a plan B, or is there plan A with Rodrada and Pietau, etc., good enough? And it's best to just double down on it. Against the Tigers, they didn't fire a shot in the first half, but they swept it away in the second, a bit like they did with Bath at the weekend. Is it enough to beat Exeter in the final? So, I mean, did Bristol really put that performance in, or did Bath throw it away?
Well, I do think they do need a plan B, and they might have one, because they were actually struggling in the first half, because Bath just put a huge amount of pressure on Sheedy. They just rushed out, got into Sheedy's face, or whoever was sort of acting in that receiver slot. And like, McNally had a great first half. Miles Reed played really well, and Bayliss, and you know, they did defend well, because Bristol started off, they looked like they were gonna carve Bath up a little bit, and then Bath got what has to be called two pretty lucky tries. And you know, Bristol looked a bit clueless, but then straight after half time they changed it, and Bath didn't have an answer. But you know, if it's Exeter, Exeter would have an answer, and they would probably not come out and do exactly the same thing after half time either. Yeah, you know, and Bath's real Achilles heel at the moment is their set pieces. They got absolutely crushed in the scrum. That's got to be a fourth or fifth game in a row that I've watched where they've been battered up front. Line out fell apart a little bit. Absolutely no issues with that red card on Dunn. So,
can't do anything about that.
So, you know, Bath did implode a little bit, but they were already beaten. Bristol had changed their tactics and had got on top.
Well, but it was an obvious tactic for Bath to get on Sheedy early to stop him playing. So they were rushing Sheedy, and as soon as sort of Bristol worked that out, they just basically stopped giving the ball to Callum Sheedy, and they were playing off nine, and they were missing, and they were doing sort of the behind passes and stuff like that.
And they just kept sort of persevering with the offloading, you know, out of tackles and just before tackles, and it just, you know, Bath had to crack in the end, and they did. You know, Bristol, good side. But I don't think they're reliant on those big names, but you know, they were relatively quiet in this game, and it was more sort of unheralded players that sort of carried them through, really, their front five.
Yeah.
I feel like we're burying the lead here. Can we talk about why Stuart Hooper tucks his socks into his tracksuit?
It's very 90s BMX chav, isn't it?
So he wears
and tucks his tracksuit into his socks.
Yeah, tucks his tracksuit into his socks and then wears
my socks into
a coat with a hoodie underneath.
I think
it's incredible. It's an incredible look for a grown adult. Like, fair enough, you're hanging around outside a train station, but if you direct to a rugby at Bath, for goodness sake, at least put some mustard chinos on.
I mean, you'd maybe expect that sort of behaviour at Sale, or you know, maybe Newcastle, but Bath.
I'm going to try and find a picture of it, because I feel like you're not really appreciating how bad it is.
I'm really not. I don't think I've ever noticed it. So
baseball cap that's too small for his head.
The Tony Pulis baseball cap.
Yeah, and the red jacket. It's an astonishing look for a fully grown adult.
For Bath, Elliot Stuke has just signed for Wasps. Do you see that, Ben?
Yeah.
Next season.
I mean, he's
good news for McNally.
Yeah.
Good news for Josh McNally.
He's done
Josh
well.
Josh has been brilliant, by the way. He was good, really good on Saturday in that sort of first 60
minutes.
Well,
he's captain
Bristol.
Now, isn't he?
He is captain when Elliot, when Charlie Yules isn't there or banned, I think.
Stoop's been good for Bath. What's he been there 3-4 years?
He's just a massive guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he's just a big unit. You know, it's not going to shatter the earth him leaving, but you know, he's put in a good shift for them.
Another question from your friend Lloyd, Ben. Did Ben enjoy the Bristol versus Bath game?
Yeah, first half was great.
Do you want a personal response to Lloyd?
Yeah, first half was great.
Anything personal you want to talk to him about?
No, he's trying to get a rise out of me.
I feel like there's a joke coming.
No, there's not. What else have we got here? We got a question about Cipriani to Bath. Would it stop the rot or make things worse? I think it's going to make absolutely no difference whatsoever.
It depends if the rot is on the pitch or off the pitch. If the rot is off the pitch, it'll probably make it worse. If it's on the pitch, they'll be a bit more creative. But the backs aren't Bath's problem. So you're right. You know, it's not the cure all, is it?
And we got a question from Ben Bacon. Is what if you could bring an NFL rule or process into rugby to make it work? What would it be, and why? Doug, have you
come back? To me.
Ben,
I don't have anything.
Or maybe we can all answer this one next week.
I'd like to see, just throwing it out there, just because I don't really understand it, but it seems to do a really good job of some things. I would like to see a consolidated collegiate type approach to youth rugby, with some kind of, not necessarily the draft, but at least instead of clubs having academies, having a centralised collegiate approach to youth rugby. And then I need to think about how those players would then get to clubs.
Do you remember a bit like Lillishall in the football? I mean, I remember as a kid going to Lillishall on a club visit and watching like all these players from all over the country play for England, because they used to have school and stuff at Lillishall. And imagine that for one.
Interesting you say that. I went out for a coffee with a today who was quite a decent rugby player in his day, and he was saying that the local rugby clubs are getting quite frustrated with the Premiership feeder system, because they're basically hoovering up all of the best talent from the local clubs to put into Premiership academies. Then when these kids are getting to 16, 17, they're discarding them and they're just disappearing from rugby completely, because like their dreams are broken. They don't want to play it anymore. So rather than letting these kids develop at lower level clubs and gradually filter up, you're pressuring these kids into taking what they think are professional contracts with WASP, but they're essentially in the WASP system but playing for Amersham and Chiltern. Then at 17, WASPs are saying to them, no, you're shit, mate. You're not playing for us. And then they leave Amersham and Chiltern because they're like, well, if I'm not going to play for Wasps, why am I going to play here? And the system at the moment is fundamentally broken to the extent where really talented rugby players are dropping out of the game because they're being told that they're not good enough for one of the 13 teams that are wealthy enough to pay them.
And instead of them going to these kind of centralised or semi-centralised development player programmes at 15, 16, 17, I think just the clubs would do better kind of outsourcing, or not outsourcing is the wrong term, but sending some of their coaching knowledge out to the clubs at junior stages, and other players then also getting the benefit from playing with some of these good players and with good coaching. I just think if you're half decent at the moment, like Doug said, if you're half decent but you're not going to make the crop, you end up doing a hell of a lot of travelling, seeing a hell of a lot of stuff going on, but then come 16, 17, whenever they make the chop, if you don't get a full academy contract, you're kind of turfed out with not so much as a thank you.
Could you almost make it like more like a hybrid, almost like the baseball, where if you picked a player, say under 23 from... So say Bristol picked up a player from, say, Redruth. Then if he was under a certain age, they would have to replace him with an older player. So have a back and forth going. And if you call a player up, you've got to drop a player down to the club you bring them up from.
You could have a farm system, but that's essentially what they do at the moment anyway. So having thought about it now, what I would do is implement a maximum squad size. So in the NFL, you're allowed a maximum squad size of 53 players plus 9 or 10, I think, on a practice squad. And in your match day squad, you're allowed 49. So you have 4 healthy scratches from if your squad's fully healthy. So what that, I think, would do is where you've got Premiership teams with 50 senior professionals plus an academy plus a youth setup, I would say to them, no, you're allowed 50 players, full stop. That is your entire roster. That would then filter talent into the lower divisions, which would then create more talented squads in the lower divisions, which would disperse talent, make the lower leagues better, which create a better feeder system, which would improve the game as a whole, in my opinion.
There you go. That answers that.
I've got one.
Go on, Ben.
So have a coach's review.
So they're doing that in bloody Super Rugby, aren't they? That's what
they're doing. captain's review.
They pinned it off.
So I don't know if this is how it worked in Super Rugby, but instead of having the video referee chiming in every 5.5 seconds, just have, you've got one review per half. If you get it right, you keep it. If you don't, you lose it.
So, and that was the theory with the captain's review, but there were some quite stringent requirements on what you could and couldn't use it for. And obviously the captains being thick as shit just didn't pay any attention to that. And they're like, oh, can we review that, please? Because I think there was a knock-on in the middle of the pitch. And the ref was like, no, you've just lost your review as well. You've been told it's only for serious foul play or for a try-scoring opportunity. Oh, shit.
I mean, that makes it a bit woolly, doesn't it? A try-scoring opportunity. I think you've got to give them more guidance than that. But that was the first thing that sprung into mind.
And there probably was more guidance.
The other thing I'd do is get, if we're talking about changing rugby, I'd get rid of touchline interventions from the linesman. Matt Carley was up to it again this weekend, weren't he?
They're always up to it, like, and some are more busy, some are busier than others.
The busier ones tend to be the full-time referees that are stuck on the touchline,
probably because they got their asses on their hand for having to do a job for their mate. It's like the guy that you've got round to your house at the weekend who's a full-time bricklayer and you want him to build you a barbecue in the garden, or help you build a barbecue in the garden. So you're there trying to do it and he's like, fucking come on, like, do this, lay that
this,
there.
Put this
that
there. Doesn't sound like a hypothetical to me. It sounds like something that's happened.
I haven't brick built a barbecue in my garden, that's for certain.
Humble brag.
But yeah, I haven't thought of one, I've got to be honest. I'm going to have to give it some thought.
Believe me, squad caps would improve A, younger players' chances, because squads would keep their really promising academy lads at the expense of some South African chancer. They would then filter down their on-the-way-out players, and players on big money would drop down, because someone like Danny Cipriani, for example, his value would drop. So he'd drop down the levels because if you've got 50 players in a salary cap that you have to stick to, you're not going to be paying a luxury player. I'd get rid of all of this, two players outside the cap, all that nonsense. I'd get rid of all of that. And I'd just have a hard cap with 50 player maximum, deal with it. That's your squad. If you want to add a player, you have to cut a player. It'd be more cutthroat, but I think it would filter down the leagues and the talent would spread and there'd be more teams that could compete.
I've got an NFL question.
Go on, Em.
It might be one for people maybe to tweet their answers, but I think it was Pat McAfee show, they were talking about how the NFL would get on in the Olympics, and they picked a rugby sevens team from NFL players. And I thought it'd be interesting to pick an Olympic rugby sevens team from the NFL.
Well, you'd have to teach them all to pass first.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. But would it be filled with running backs and wide receivers, or would you have linebackers?
They went filled with linebackers.
They went full running backs, but
well, they're wrong.
Well, running backs don't tackle people, do they, on the whole? So you'd have
pick
people that could run and tackle.
Pick linebackers. You people like Patrick Willis.
Yeah.
And
who was the lad that tore it up last season for Washington out of the draft?
Yeah, I know.
That lad who tore it up in Washington last year.
It'd be people
Didn't he get arrested?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't remember what his name is, but he was
in a federal jail.
Chase someone?
Chase Young.
Yeah, and the Cleveland Browns D lineman.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, what's his name? Is he the one that hit the Pittsburgh quarterback with Myles Garrett?
No. Myles Garrett.
Yeah, I was going to say, that smashed the quarterback with his helmet.
Yeah.
Struggle to find a scrum half, I reckon.
As riveting as this is, listening to you guys try and remember the names of obscure NFL players.
No, I don't bother. I can't remember the name of rugby players.
Right. Okay. Well, let's move on because we've been going for
this quick 45 minutes. Podcast, well, isn't it?
Any other business? Do you have anything else you want to talk about? And I've got some NFL related. Any other business?
Oh God, great. Yeah.
Well, no.
I have my jab on Friday, Ben. Good luck tomorrow, fella.
Thanks, man.
Because I had to drive to Exeter and back and do a game in the middle with full-on Oxford AstraZeneca side effects. Well, let me tell you, those shits are bad.
Should have said you're at Exeter. Would have tried to get up there. But
well, I wouldn't have had any interest in seeing you because I was so fully in the locker that I couldn't do anything.
I would have had no interest in seeing you because I don't really like you.
That's the end of the sentence.
I just want to talk quickly about NFL and fantasy football. And obviously the other week was the NFL draft. And it's a sort of time of year where people start firing up their fantasy leagues and people doing like dynasty leagues that play dynasty literally 12
dynasty
months of the year.
Or English. Come on.
Sorry. Well, dynasty leagues. 12 months of the year, which is the weirdest thing I think I've ever seen. And anyway, I put out a just a trade with somebody because I actually didn't have a starting quarterback in one of my teams. And the trade basically, not everybody in the league gets to view the trade, and all they did was go, oh, that's a fucking bullshit trade. What the fuck are you doing that for? I can't believe that's been accepted. I can't believe, like, it has zero impact on their team. And for that reason, I decided to drop a few truth bombs at a few people in that league. And
do I know the person?
Yeah, you absolutely do. And to the point where I removed myself from the league, and then those people, just out of nowhere, like, decided to block me on all social media and remove me from all from another league that is has been set up in memory of sadly one of the guys who used to present on this podcast, and they're doing a charity.
We're talking about this after the pod,
and and just not going to let me take part. So you know, it's pretty grown up. And this is fantasy NFL football. You know, it's the weirdest. There's some real virgins in the NFL fantasy.
I have noticed there are some very high maintenance people.
Real virgins. Yeah. Real virgins. Anyway,
couldn't agree more.
Phil.
Could not agree more.
So,
just before you go, Phil, DK Metcalf, who is a Seattle Seahawks wide receiver, ran in the American 100-meter Olympic trials and clocked 10.37 seconds.
I think that's why it came up.
For those people who think the NFL, you know, they're not super athletes, he clocked 10.37 seconds. He's the 15th fastest man in America.
15th at 10.3.
Yeah. And he's built like a brick shithouse.
It really
is. Sorry,
Phil. No, that's fine. So my eldest son, James, who is 11, did a bit of a charity thing last May and wanted to do something again this year. So he has decided that he's going to, for 30 days in a row, run 3 kilometres, cycle 3 kilometres and row 1 kilometre every day. And he's doing it to raise money for Tommy's, which is the baby loss research charity. Some of you guys know, not all of you might not, but unfortunately, Mrs. Farmvet and I lost our son, Harry, in between James and Charlie. And it hit James pretty hard at the time, and has kind of been instrumental in shaping our family going forwards, I think it's fair to say, but is a big part of our lives. So, yeah, massively proud of him for taking that on. So if anybody does want to dig deep, I'm aware there's a lot of people on the Twitter group have already done so. It's justgiving.com/fundraising/James May Madness. And I'm sure Russ will
I'm pretty sure I've shared it already on Twitter.
I haven't done it yet, Phil, and I absolutely will.
I'm not going to do it until he's finished all 30 days.
Fair play. Proper dad response, that.
Yeah. Everybody who's donated so far has been incredibly great. We're incredibly grateful for, and they've been very generous, and currently sits at £526 donated, which is super.
It's a decent effort. Well done, James. Well done, James. Right, let's get out of here because we've done... Ben, sorry, did you want to do any of the business, or are you...
No, I had a whimsical one, but let's leave it there.
Yeah, good. Good, good. Right. We will see you next week after some rugby, I guess. If nothing else, enjoy your weeks. Go well. Sports Social Podcast Network.